latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Summer on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races, just a tick tack
on this Monday. Talked to Michael Veach and to Nick Harris about Mary Lou and Johnny D joining us, and Johnny with a momentous trip to Del Mar, more important than his typical opening week trip, let's say, to Del Mar and to California in general. Johnny, those were the greatest pictures ever. You and your granddaughter, Mazel Tov.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you very much. It's quite a feeling, and I'm sure, well, everyone I've spoken to who's experienced having a grandchild, it's a different feeling. It's similar to when your child was born, but it's different. It's a little bit, I don't know, maybe because you're older, obviously, and you can appreciate it more, or maybe there's a sense of extending the line, extending the family. I don't think it's very difficult to put into words, but it is. It's an amazing feeling, and it's different than when your child was born, which was an absolute an incredible feeling to begin with. I mean, that was But it's a different stage in your life, and I think you feel differently about it. Anyway, she was born on Mother's Day, so I haven't seen her yet. And I guess I'll go all the way back to the day she was born and say, you know, social media, sometimes we throw our hands up in the air. It drives us crazy, some of the comments on there. However, it's also provided us with a wonderful way of keeping in touch. And when she was being born, as my daughter was and her husband were at the hospital, he was giving updates on he was texting on WhatsApp, and everyone on the string was all the family members, and we were all firing back. And what a great way to keep in touch with what's going on and when she was born. And so that was great fun because I was on the golf course at the time. And I just, every so often, here comes another text. And then finally she's born and all the guys were all, hey, congratulations. You know, it was great. It was great fun to be part of that. But to meet her finally yesterday, because they live in Hong Kong, so it's even further to Hong Kong than it is to Mama for you. So I had to wait to see her, and of course I've seen many pictures of her, and just to hold her for the first time and to look into her blue eyes, and she's, you know, you realize how fortunate you are. My daughter's healthy and happy, and this baby is healthy and happy, and it's great. So that was they brought the baby here to Del Mar, which is where my daughter grew up. my first wife was actually the mother of my daughter, was actually a very intelligent woman. She figured out to get rid of me and move to Del Mar. That was a clutch decision there. So my daughter was fortunate to grow up here in San Diego in the Del Mar area. And, you know, when she went to Korea to teach, when she first left the country to go teach in Korea, I said to her, "Are you crazy?" I said, "I have spent my entire life trying to get to Del Mar, to live in Del Mar, and you're leaving to go to Korea." I said, "I don't understand what you're doing." But then she moved on to Hong Kong. She's been in Hong Kong, I think, 10 years now. So it's been a long time. And it's just great that she's come back home, and her husband Gaz is from Great Britain, so his family, his 92-year-old grandfather and 86-year-old grandmother made the trip from the UK to Del Mar to join us. Everyone's going to get together, his parents and his grandparents are all gathering, and it's going to be great, and Wednesday we're all going out to the races. So what could be better? What could be better?
Yeah, it's a win-win. I love it. So to distill this down, Johnny, I'm going to feel differently when Tina's son, Zach, and his wife, when they have their child. It'll feel differently for me than it does when we get a new kitten.
Yes. The
okay. All right. All right. I just wanted to check. I wasn't sure. If
it's just... No. I love my puppy when I got him, but it's different. It really is. Yeah. The babies. It's amazing. The babies, when they're that young, like Kaya is born on Mother's Day, U.S. Mother's Day, not Hong Kong Mother's Day, U.S. Mother's Day. She's almost human.
So, yeah. She's gotten to the point, right, where it's not just a raisin.
Yeah. it's just well, in the car riding home from a brunch yesterday, we're in the car, and Kaya was just, she was just kind of getting a little fussy every time we stopped at a light. She was okay, we were moving, but when we stopped at a light, she'd get a little fussy. But then she looked over at Gail, and Gail was talking, and she locked her eyes on Gail, stopped crying, and just honed in on Gail and just watched Gail for a good 10 minutes, just focused on her. And then in a baby's life, 10 minutes is like 15 years, I think. She just zoned in on Gail and just watched her, didn't cry, didn't make a peep, and just focused on her. And I told my daughter who's driving and her husband, I said, yeah, I said, she just locked in on Gail. I said, she just is attracted to shiny things.
That's right.
That's all it can be.
Exactly.
So it was really great, and you know, I can't wait to see her again, and I'll squeeze as much time as we possibly can into this Del Mar trip, and that's going to have to make that last for a while, because as I said, Hong Kong is not a stone's throw.
No, it's a schlep.
Yeah, it's a schlep. Well, thank you. That's a good word. We made the trip once, Gail and I. We actually attended.
I remember when you went. Yeah, yeah.
The Hong Kong Derby. Yeah.
That's right.
Which is for 4-year-olds, by the way, which is interesting. And I remember, I get a quick story about that, which I've probably told before. Oh, I've told all my stories before. I was midway through the afternoon.
Well, yeah, you're a grandpa. So, yeah. Grandpas tell the story. Right.
Well, hey, we have somebody new that hasn't heard all the stories.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I'm standing out on the balcony at the racetrack, and shots in, standing on the balcony at Del Mar Derby, and this mass of people below, and just a beautiful, gorgeous day, and that these high-rises, just dotting, just like Santa Anita has the mountains. In Hong Kong, they have high rises, just covering the mountains. It's beautiful, and in its own way. And I'm standing there, chastising myself because I haven't cashed a ticket, and I'm stuck like $1,000, and I'm chastising. How could you bet these horses? You don't know these horses. What are you crazy? You should know better than this. You're down $1,000. You got a half the card left. You're having lunch, you're here with your daughter and your wife and her girlfriend, and you've blown the day already. And then it dawned on me. It was $1,000 Hong Kong dollars, which was like $48.
So ridiculous. Yeah, you have told that story again. Oh, boy. All right. We'll let you get away with it.
So I also went to the race. Gail and I went Saturday. We got into town. Boom, we went right over to the track. And walking into the track, you know, we've got crossing the street from the parking lot to the racetrack and the main entrance and the clubhouse side. There are PETA protesters, a group of PETA protesters with signs, being very vocal, yelling at patrons as they enter the track. They weren't obscene, but they were yelling obscene things. In other words, you know, like horses are going to die, and you're part of the problem. You know, if you didn't know better, you would feel better. I'll put it that way. If you didn't know better, you would feel like you were contributing to something bad. And then, as you pass the PETA protesters, immediately next to them was Doug O'Neill's group of, I call them Doug O'Neill's group, but they're backside workers who were there, and there's like twice as many, maybe
correct,
three times as many, and it stretched. It was so wonderful, and they're holding signs, you know, we love racing, we love our animals, and, you know, just a positive, uplifting, and as we scale I turned from the PETA, and we made our way past the PETA folks. Well, who's holding the banner? Doug O'Neill, Nick Quesada, Nick's son, a bunch of, and his cheer went up. Johnny D, his cheer went up. And it was like everyone walking along, you know, we were walking along in the
background. I love it.
Waited across the street, and here his cheer went up, and I yelled, and it was just so great to see these guys because I don't see them enough. And we stood there, we talked to him for a while and everything. And then when we left, I told Gail, I said, you know, why couldn't this have happened Wednesday when we were coming in with the family from the UK and everyone? They would think I was a big deal here. Now when we walk in, they're just going to say, oh, you're still here? You know, it's like, no big deal. You didn't go home yet? You know. it took all the air out of the balloon. But it was, I'll tell you what, being, you know, when I come back here, well, to just let everyone know, I worked on the Southern California backside as a jockey in a million different capacities, mainly as a jockey's agent for 30 years. So, you know, I have two homes, and this is like visiting one of my homes. And so seeing everyone on the racetrack is just such a pleasure. And I give this advice to everyone I see. If you want people to really appreciate you, go away. Just go away. Because when you come back, it's so refreshing. Everyone's so glad to see you. And to visit everyone and hang out at what's become now known as Quigley's Corner, with a gathering of different racing personalities from around the country who, when they come to Del Mar, that's where they kind of stop. Everyone stops by and pays their respects. And along the way, that spot, you will bump into, you know, a variety of characters. And just to see, excuse me, particularly Dan Smith in publicity, where I began my Del Mar career in, I believe, 1979, 1980, working for Dan Smith, and it's always good to see Dan, touch base with him, and to see people coming, you know, as they move from the paddock back to the clubhouse, or turf club, and they pass by Quigley's Corner there. I was stopped by a Bassett was on his way up the stairs. He stopped by and he grabbed me. He said, "Oh," he said, "yeah, is it hot back there? Is that why you're here this weekend?" I said, "Yeah, a little bit." But I said, "Well, your show's going on, you know, the race at Monmouth, obviously." He said, "Yeah." He said, "What's going on back there?" I said, "No, it's just incredibly hot." So it was just great to see everyone, to touch base with everyone, and we'll go back. We'll get some more of that later this week. And so that's a touch on the Del Mar part. And then there's the racing. It was an interesting racing weekend, to say the least, because of, obviously, big things happened on both coasts. I mean, it was good racing, truncated racing for sure. But I explained to Gail and anyone else that would listen, this is a gift I have. You know, I saw months in advance that this was going to be a weekday. A weekday on the East Coast, going to be very hot, extremely hot. Many tracks would cancel. And so I made the arrangements. Del Mar, and my granddaughter just happened to be here.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
Now we're going to talk to Phil D'Amato and Tim Yakhtin, Johnny, after you, and we'll talk about their success. But there's a lot to digest, and as I opened this morning, you know, I was obligated to talk Haskell, excuse me, and having been down there, and you know, we ended up, you know, taking the opportunity when it became clear that, you know, the feature wasn't going to be run till 8 o'clock, we headed north. We went up to see my father in Connecticut instead. And we just, it wasn't practical to stay there till you know, 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, and then try to head back at that point. So we lit out. But I don't know if you, I doubt you had a chance to hear the conversation we had with Dennis Drazen on Friday. And I wasn't going to, you know, make any predetermination at the time on Friday when we discussed it, but he suggested one of their options was going to be to delay the racing until later in the day. And then that sort of came to pass, but you know, you also had, you know, you had Governor Murphy get involved here, and you know, for people that made the effort to come to the track, to have this unfold the way it did, I mean, once you made the commitment that they were going to run no matter what, more or less, you put yourself, I think, in a position to be criticized for, you know, for people that, you know, the public that came. I'm not one of those who is saying, oh, the horses were in danger. It doesn't have to be 100 degrees for horses to overheat. I mean, horses get, you know, heat prostration in much lower temperatures. It all depends on the horse. They took every precaution, and there's precautions taken along these lines all summer long and all year long in a place like Florida and Texas and Louisiana. But the, you know, the heightened public, you know, perception issue is what weighed on this. And I'm just curious what you think, you know, could have been done differently, or was this the best case scenario the way it unfolded? You know, and I don't know how much of it you were able to keep tabs on as the afternoon unfolded.
Yeah, what's interesting, I think, about this, where we find ourselves right now as a sport is, you know, obviously there's the heightened sensitivity because of what's going on this winter. And where the sport is right now, we have everyone's eyes on us. The safety of the horses. Look, to start off, we know, you and I and anyone in this industry spent a great deal of time in this industry, knows the safety of the horse is paramount for everyone. We know that. But the world doesn't know that. And some of the, you know, the propaganda that's out there saying that that the racing industry doesn't care about their athletes is totally untrue, but it's had an effect. Everywhere you go, if someone says, "Oh, I'm in the racing industry," "Oh, how about what happened this winter?" They won't want to talk about it, and that's what they don't want to talk about. You know, the Kentucky Derby is normally what they wanted to talk about. Now it's been replaced by this, so there's new heightened sensitivity. So I think what happened this weekend is that the racetrack management were put in a position where it's been hot before. This is not the first time it's been hot. And when I was a kid, I can remember nights where I couldn't sleep. You know, we didn't have air conditioning, and it was so hot you couldn't sleep. Look, it's been hot before, and horses have run before, and as you mentioned, other states, Florida, year-round racing. But what the issue is now everyone's hypersensitive, and we have all this added information. We have the heat index. We have everyone's got a different name for it. It feels like, or what's the real temp, or what's this. Everyone's got a name for it, and it's frightening. Plus, you combine that with the sensitivity of the situation, and they really didn't have any choice. And then once one track cancels, and the other tracks kind of think, well, we better cancel because if something happens, you know. But the threat of something happening, we've progressed as an industry in taking care of horses. Because at first, when you'd see, look, you would be, for me, I would be in Arcadia, which, you know, okay, it's California, and it'd be, you know, 100 degrees, or at Pomona in out in the an hour from Arcadia, where it would be 105 and the smog so thick you couldn't see the mountains. I mean, and the horses would collapse. After a race, they would collapse. Now, what would happen? They'd run over, they'd get buckets of water, and they'd throw the water on the horse, and the horse would jump up and be fine. So that was one way. Now we've learned from that. Now we've got hoses. At Santa Anita, they've got hoses every 30 feet or 50 feet or whatever as the horses walk back. If somebody gets a little woozy, they don't wait for them to fall. Now they give them all water. They bathe them. You see horses now on TV come back. They got a sponge and a bucket, and the groom's, you know, putting water on their head. We learned, in other words, we learned how to deal with that, how to protect the horses better. And I think we're learning now that, okay, if it is hot, maybe the best thing is to, you know, like, call it off. But we have to learn to do it in advance. And that's better for the fans. And I think we're going to learn as time goes by. Because you see in the winter now, I think a more sensitive approach is in the winter. They're calling. If the wet, the forecast is bad for the next couple of days, call off a day in advance. You know, like 2 days in advance. Let people know we're not racing Thursday or Friday. So you don't buy your form, you don't buy your seeds or whatever handicapping stuff you use. You don't do all the work. You don't get in the take public transportation and get out to the track or drive. People don't mind if you let them know. And I think what happened in Mama's case is they were kind of stuck because the television, the women you're in, it's your biggest race. They know it's not that bad. They know horses are going to be okay. But the pressure of everybody else canceling, the pressure of what if? What if something happens? And I think all that kind of got in the mix. But I also believe that we've learned something. That, you know, when it rains in baseball, they don't play. It's canceled. Sometimes people go to the ballpark and they sit there for hours and we never start playing again. It's canceled. We can't do it. So I think a better idea is, when it's raining, and it's been raining for 5 days, don't race. You know, let people know. Look, the other thing is that our weather forecasts are better now. They're more accurate. They're still not, they're still like handicappers. They're right about 70% of the time, but they're way more accurate than they used to be. We have things way more in advance than we used to. We have a day, 7 days in advance, and they're pretty accurate now, really. So If bad weather's coming in, whether it's cold, freezing cold, terrible winds, whether it's rain, whether it's heat, whatever it is, cancel. I know it's going to cost money, but it's probably the prudent thing to do right now. It's the prudent thing to do, and do it in advance. Take care of the fans. So I think we're learning. I think this is a learning curve. And I think we'll get better at it. And I think that's what happened this weekend with a new, I think for me, with a new experience. I mean, tracks have closed because of heat before, but I don't ever remember to this level. You know, Saratoga, all the Eastern tracks basically had to close. And then you had some tracks say, look, we're not going to race Saturday or Sunday, we're done. Okay, so the thing is, let the fans know early. But Mama's is in a tough spot. They wanted to get it in. They had reason to want to get it in. They also had the knowledge of the whole thing about being close to the ocean and the breezes and all. I didn't buy that because I've been sitting on Cape May on the beach right next to the water. And it's still hot, you know, when it gets like that, the humidity gets high, and it's still over 100. So I didn't buy that so much. But I also know that they've run at Mammoth in the heat before. It's been that hot before. It's not like they set a an all-time record for heat. It was a terrible heat wave, yes, but we've had them before, and horses have run before, and they've been fine. But the prudent thing to do was to finally, and they proved it. They ran the races that they ran. Okay, yep. We moved the time back, but it was still hot. So that's what I think. I think it's a learning curve. I think we're going to get better at being proactive because the world is more sensitive now. Not just to the horses, the athletes, but to the workers, to the fans, to everyone. We're more sensitive now. Comfort. And we would do things differently. Times change. You know, when I walked to school, I had to walk 10 miles in the snow every day to get to school. So these kids today, they don't know what anything's like.
You probably have to walk maybe a block and a half. Let's straighten this out. And even if you had to travel any distance, you could have gotten on the subway in 30 seconds. Who's kidding who?
It snowed every day when I was a kid.
Exactly. It's, well, let me get Johnny. I do want to get your thoughts about the way the Haskell actually was run, and you know, To me, when the inquiry light went on, and I knew there would be one, based on the way King for a Day, kind of. Yeah, exactly. But it to me, it was never even. Tina said, "What are they going to do?" I said, "They're not going to do anything." I said, "It's a non-call." Of course, I said that at Derby too. But this one was even more of an obvious non-call.
Well, you know, obviously I've been busy. I've been out of pocket, as they say. I've been doing different things. So I've never seen or heard what Johnny Velasquez said. Now, people say this is a case where people say, why do you talk to the jockey? What could a jockey possibly say that would change your opinion? He's got videotape. You've got what you see live. Why do you talk to jockeys? Here's a case, and I do not know this to be true because I haven't seen anything that Johnny said. Here's a Hall of Fame jockey who speaks well, who can tell you exactly, who's a great horseman, can tell you exactly what happened. I have not heard an explanation from him. Now, maybe you've read something somewhere. I haven't yet, so I can't really say. I'm going to give an example, and it may not be an example of this, but in my experience, sometimes when I've worked for jockeys, and this situation has occurred, they come back, and maybe I'll say to them, you shouldn't be claimed foul or whatever, and they'll say, nah, my horse was getting out a little bit on the turn right there and at the bad spot, and the other horse held his ground, and I had to come out of there. Now, I don't know that the case with what happened here. I'm just giving an example of where, and you can't see it. It's hard because of the view that you get. It does. I agree with you. It doesn't appear that Maximum Security moved at all. From the video, it doesn't. It looked like he stayed in his path. He didn't move it. He didn't give him room. I'll say that. But it didn't look like he tightened it up on him either. He just held his ground. And Johnny's horse, King for a Day, was not quite, he wasn't holding his ground either. He was losing a little bit of ground. He was on the lead, and then he was dropping back to about a half length. And when you're in that spot on the turn, they'll change leads. They'll shift a little bit. You know, you've either got to get in there or get the hell out of there. And it was a little later than that. They kind of already moved in the turn, but still, that's a precarious spot. And I'd like to hear Johnny's explanation for what he felt that. Maybe he felt that Maximum Security tightened it up. Maybe it was, who was on the outside? Mucho Gusto. Maybe Mucho Gusto.
He was leading. Yep.
Yeah. But I don't know. And from the video, I didn't see anything. So that's why you talk to the riders. And look, will they lie? Will they? Will they lie on the stand? Yes, they will lie on the stand. But that's your job, to know who you're talking to and to know your experience with that person. Look, in everyday life, we talk to people. Some people we believe, some people we don't believe at all. It depends on, you know. And then you take what they say and you put it against the, does it match up with what you see in the video? Does it make sense? Is it possible? So that's why we talk to the writers. I'm not of the school that the one issue that we're faced with, though, is when talking to writers is some guys are more eloquent than other guys. For many jockeys, English is not their first language, and for some of them, they're not very fluent in English, so it makes it difficult for them to express themselves, and that is that's not fair, really. I remember Stewart when I first visited the racetrack. I wasn't even there yet. I was still in college. I was talking to a steward, and he was explaining to me what, you know, when they talk to jockeys, he said, well, for instance, he said, the other day we had a jockey, two jockeys that we had to talk to, and the first jockey was Bill Shoemaker, and we got Bill on, and he said, Bill, what happened out there? He said, well, you know, boss, Judge, he said, I hit him two times right-handed, and he wasn't responding, so I switched left-handed. I tapped him two times left-handed. He drifted about a foot, and then I corrected him again. I went right-handed once, and then he was pretty straight to the wire. And then I said, okay, Bill, thank you. And then they got the other jock. He said, I think his name was Henry. He said, Henry, what happened in the stretch? He said, oh, I don't know, boss. I was just sticking and driving.
Sticking and driving.
Yeah. So you got one guy who's, you know, a Hall of Fame, legendary horseman, and he knows every precise thing he's doing on the back of a horse, and the other guy's just trying to win a race. You know, he's the guy's head down and just driving. So is that fair? Yeah. But then you look at the video and you make it, you know. So anyway, I didn't see anything like you, didn't see any fouls, didn't see anything, and it was a terrific race, really. maximum security, I'm not saying he's ready to be enshrined in Cooperstown or Saratoga, but he's a good horse, he's a really good horse, and he's been a good horse since Florida. And I'll never forget the day when Santa Anita, they ran, I don't know what race they ran, but Baffert said, he pointed out, you know, that horse in Florida, he's a pretty good horse.
Yep.
And ever since he won at Gulfstream, in other words, everyone's been trying to say, well, he got an easy lead, and he won't get that in the Derby, and he can't go a mile and a quarter, and he ran for 16, and he did this, and he did that, and blah, 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 blah. You know what? They weren't going to get by him in the Derby. And this time, Kingsford Day caught him coming off the layoff. Kingsford Day was razor sharp. He was a little bit not there. And Jason Service probably thought he could get him home without tightening the screws. He got beat, but he ran his guts out, didn't he, that day when Kingsford Day beat him? And he comes back here, and this time he rates, which he relaxed. He came again, and he battled with Mucho Gusto. And Mucho Gusto was there to win. He wasn't there to just show up. And, okay, we've got a great three-year-old scenario now. I mean, the Travers is going to be, well, we haven't seen the Jim Dandy yet, but even leading into that, this is a, what a interesting setup this is going to be. I can't wait.
Yeah.
I can't wait, really. I'm excited. This three-year-old picture is, it's scrambled. But maximum security deserves to be at the top. Nobody's going to beat him in the Derby. And whether you think he fouled or he didn't foul.
Yeah,
nobody's
agreed.
Going to beat him.
Agreed. Agreed.
So what has he done? He's won the Derby. He's won the Haskell. Man, that's pretty good.
Well,
see what he does next time.
Well, and that's the key. He's gonna. What's interesting is that he's going to come here, and looking forward. I've been trying to catch up with Jason. service, and maybe it won't be until he gets to town, but he's bringing him to Saratoga, and he'll be there for everybody to see and watch train. And we'll, you know, that'll enhance the build-up to the
event. Yeah, certainly the interesting way that Jason trains his horses is, you know, I would like more information on that. I would like, you know.
Lots of gallops. Gallop.
It's hard to get it out of Jason too much, though. He's not as talkative as some trainers, but there's a reason he does what he does. And I'd like to know his theories and his thinking. Maybe I'll get a hold of John and see if he can, if he can get Jason to crack. Because it's interesting. You know, I'd like to see, you know, a video would probably, it must take like 5 minutes for them to do everything that they do out there, or 10 minutes. I don't know. I'd just like to see it. It's interesting.
And agreed. Agreed.
Here he's got a, you know, a high profile horse who, and he's trained his way all the way along. And by the way, Steve, you know, hats off to you for, I'm sorry I forget the gentleman's name, but you had the manager for the West on.
Ben Glass.
Explained a lot. Yes. Who explained why they were
Yep.
for 16. And he was very open and honest, and that settled down a lot of my fears. It wasn't necessarily a serious physical issue that made them run for 16. It just, and you know, I wonder, I don't know this, but I wonder if perhaps training the way Jason does, not really having them go 6 furlongs or 4 furlongs, you know, blistering work or 5 furlong work, but this unusual way that he trains, perhaps this horse just didn't show, and you know, didn't show anything.
They've said that he had some issues as a 2-year-old, and that they were dealing with, and you know, off and on, and you know, that's part of it as well. And I said this again yesterday on TV. They gave away the stallion. They gave away the dam. There was not a single sibling that had raised a hoof. This is an outfit. The Gary West team buys horses for an average of about $300,000 to $450,000. That's their typical purchase price. They didn't need a homebred by New Year's Day who had been sent off to South America, to Brazil. They weren't expecting anything because there was no reason to expect anything, but now they've got something. And I gotta say, I said this yesterday with Nick Zito with us on TV, the disdain and the way in which people talk about Saez, Jason Service, Gary West, and this horse is disgusting. It's disgusting.
Those people that don't know, that's all. But my favorite comment in the explanation, you hit all high points, but you missed one high point that, as a horse player, I absolutely love. And I think he explained this, that Jason said, we're going to run him for 16, because if we run him for 30, somebody might take him.
And it's funny because the other day, actually, Andy, I forget what the occasion was, but Andy said that during either a talking horses or a prattle pre-race about basically, you know, daring people to take the horse. And that's not a new gambit. That's as old as, you know, as sending your horse out against another one. So, Johnny, this was great. And how long are you staying out there?
We'll be out here through next Saturday. Saturday's the party where everyone gets together. Yeah.
Nice. Very nice.
So we'll do that. And then, you know, in the midst of all this, fun in the sun, I know you've got I know you've got your own company.
I got my own game going. I'm running my own game.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Somebody mentioned that Saturday when they ran when Pumiac Teams Horse won. That was your horse Saturday, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Mucho Unusual. Unusual.
Yep. Yeah. And
Tim's with us next.
Mentioned after, Leo Vukmanovic mentioned to me, he said, that was Vic's horse. That's the Vic horse in the competition.
Exactly.
And we had to call an audible. I had already sent in the races, half Saratoga, half Del Mar, but then Saratoga canceled. Thankfully, they did in advance. It helped everyone. And we were able to switch all over to 10 Del Mar races. Lucas Peltz was the winner this week. A total of $447 in earnings. That's his mutual total for a $10 win wager on one horse in each of the 10 races. That's a $100 investment. So he went almost four and a half times the investment. He got back $5,000. Michael O'Grady was second of $428. Stewart actually was tied for second. Michael O'Grady and Stewart Levin tied $428 each. Might be Levine. I don't know if it's Levin or Levine. How do you know? You don't know, do you? Tell me. You know or you don't know?
Yeah, I know. Say again?
If it's Levine or Levine? How do you know?
Well, no, it's only Levine in Philadelphia. The only Levines we know are in Philadelphia. It's Levine.
Okay. All right. But I don't know where Stewart lives. So, Stewart, congratulations. You were tied for something with $428. And he got $1,500, him and Michael O'Grady, $1,500 each. Gary Miller, third, and he earned $500. He earned $420 in live wagers, but then he got $500 on top of that. Total winnings for the season, Eugene Sprock is leading the pack, $609.50. Lucas Pelt, this week's winner, second, $576. Clarence Barnum, third, $536. And Michael O'Grady, this week's tied for runner-up, $518.50. We're going to do this again next week. Fun in the Sun. Go to expressbet.com. It's a $10. It's free to enter. There's no cost registration. ExpressBet account holders only. You make a $10 live win wager on one horse in each of 10 races. Hopefully, this weekend we'll have 5 Saratoga and 5 Del Mar. Opening week was all Saratoga. This week was all Del Mar. Hopefully, we'll get to go half and half next week. Saturday.
Nice. Well, thank everybody for playing and being able to adapt to the circumstance. I did the same thing when it became obvious what a difficult circumstance it was going to be for Saturday. That's why I picked the San Clemente, because it had a nice big field, and I figured, all right, we'll go. And I did the same thing on Sunday. I picked the Wicker. This is for the Beat Bick, and we had a huge turnout, over 1,500, and
beautiful.
I turned them back on Saturday. Yesterday, I went with Souter, the Mark Glatt, and it was Richard Mandela that won it. And I think I've heard from a few people already that got on board. Bombard was actually my alternate horse, and it's interesting. The way, and I'll fold this in too. I we got to get to Phil D'Amato and Tim Yakteen, but I talked earlier, Johnny. I don't know if you had a chance to listen, but Joel Rosario's performance out there, particularly on Macho Unusual, and Luis Saez on Saturday in Jersey. I mean, these two are riding. I think they're 1-2, 2-1. Right now, they're having the best years of anybody, and I think they're riding at the highest level. Saez's ride on War Story in that Monmouth Cup, he carried that horse to the wall. That was unbelievable, because that horse was a chicken in a pot.
Yeah, big pot. Congratulations to our friends of the family, John Grenier. South Philly boy. South Philly boy made good. He's and Glenn Ellis, owners of the War Story. Congratulations to them. And if there was any doubt about my good friend Ron Anderson's excellence as an agent, sending Rosario to Del Mar, knowing long in advance that Saratoga would be heated out on Saturday, having the foresight to send his jock to California.
Unbelievable. Johnny D, enjoy it, and we'll get the full complete post Del Mar trip report next week.
Stevie, it's been great. I don't know what else to say. It's been great.
Well, congratulations again. Yes, you are. No doubt about it. Johnny D, everybody, XB Johnny D, and he's a grandpa. Literally and figuratively, he repeated at least two stories today that he's told you before. But if you're a new listener, they're new to you. So I think we are officially going to retire the sticking and driving story, though. that one is old enough to vote. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Phil D'Amato is going to join us, and Tim Yakteen and Stuart Simon. We're going to sign Stuart up, and since we're talking about Canada, the Prince of Wales is tomorrow. Do not forget this, and I'm sure we'll be talking to Richard Baltus, because one bad boy, we'll save it till after the race, one bad boy looks very, very tough coming back out of the Queen's Plate win. And, of course, he's been at Woodbine working coming out of the plate. He drew the one hole. He's 7-5 in the Prince of Wales. He's only going to have to face four horses. Avi's Flatter, one of two for Josie Carroll. Tone Broke is coming back out of the plate for Asmussen and LNH Racing, the Broken Vow colt, taking the blinkers off. And he's a macho man. The other, Josie Carroll, 8-1 with Husbands, and then Skywire, Cassie, who had been, you know, an early season plate hope for Gary Barber and Lou Tucci, and Skywire, who actually found himself some trouble in the plate. He's going to try to come back, and he is, he had one start on a main track, but it was a sloppy sealed Gulfstream, so not much of a read for him. He's a Fleet Alex out of a Gone West mare. And might have reason to like a main track. Of course, one bad boy started his career at Santa Anita on the main track and was actually okay. Didn't win. He didn't win until moving to the grass in April. But Twirling Candy out of the Stormy Atlantic mare. So number two in the Triple Crown. North of the border, the Prince of Wales tomorrow, Fort Erie. There's something for people to do on their dark day. Drive across the state, right? How about that? Hop in the car, drive to Buffalo, go over the bridge. That's the, what is that bridge? That's not the Peace Bridge, is it? Is that the Peace Bridge? I forget. It's been a while since I went over there on that end. But you could go tomorrow to see the Prince of Wales. 7:35, I think, is the post time. 7:36. Back after this, we'll go out to California, talk a little bit with Phil D'Amato and with Tim Yakteen on their weekends. Back after a break.